Our world is magical. Games are magical. Open your eyes and prepare to discover how magic and games intersect.
Merry meet and welcome to Covenstead, a podcast about gaming and magic. Covenstead is brought to you by the co-creators of Ironbound, Guardians of Nirvala. Ironbound is a fantasy TTRPG about witches versus machines. Become one of the brave Ironbound and use your magic to defend Nirvala from the mechanized locust-like apothecary.
Which today, right now, at this very moment, is about first sessions and session prep, I guess, really in a sense, but specifically the first session.
Right. Or, okay, so for me, the game really starts with session zero. Right. I mean, I kind of consider that the first session because it's super important. If you're going to set up the game and you're setting things up and you want to set things up in a good way, you have to have a session zero. You just have to. Like, I mean, if someone, like, I rarely see this now because I think session zeros have become kind of the standard at this point. To do it, but there was a time, like maybe a couple years ago, where I would see, I mean, and who knows, maybe I'm just not right in the right circles to see it, but yeah, there was a couple years ago where every once in a while you'd see someone like say, you know, session zeros are, you know, why would you do that? You know, if you know your players and this, that, and the other thing, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, that sort of stuff. We're like, you know, what's the point of that? You know, you just figure that out in the first session and stuff like that, you know. I haven't seen that for a while, but I did see it and everything. But I think if you want to set it up to have a great first session and to really set your game up to succeed, you definitely need to have a session zero.
Yeah. And those, we did discuss this in our session zero, actually, of the show. But just as a quick little recap, session zero is the general term for that first time that everyone sits down to actually create characters, establish safety tools, you know, kind of set parameters, in some cases too, even choose the game itself or the particular setting or genre, you know, or which edition you want to do. You know, if you want to do a Call of Cthulhu game, there's like 7 editions to choose from in that sense. And even then, which adventure does everyone want to run? So yeah, that's what we're talking about. And yeah, you're right. I mean, like, you know, that can take away so much legwork from that first session because it at least gives you some bullet points to start with, you know, and especially too of just like, okay, so that idea that I've had of, you know, these superheroes who have to go rescue their abducted parents as their motivation, I'm going to actually not do that at the moment because it turns out, you know, like, you know, because Jerry's mom, you know, ran away, you know, like, you know, so he's got abandonment issues when it comes to parents. That's an area he does want to touch. I got to adjust that. It gives you that chance to make those kind of, you know, that early prep work that lets you know if you even want to bother. I've had a session zero where by the time we reached the end of the session zero, we were just like, this doesn't seem to be gelling, you know, like what we expected this game would do. And then what we got out of creating the characters was like, how about something else? This isn't feeling it. And that would have saved a lot of trouble and effort because that was for a D&D game. And that's, you know, that was going to be like creating NPCs and like third edition too, which was, oh, that was a load. That was a load of work to do prep back then.
Yeah. I mean, usually how mine work, you know, we're getting ready to do a game. So let's say, you know, we're getting ready to do a game. I'd say, okay, everybody. And I'd usually do this over text or messenger or whatever. Like we don't kind of need to be together to do this first part. What I usually do is we decide what game we're going to play, you know, because that's easier to do kind of a little before and everyone can have their input. And then when you get there, because every game that you do is going to need like a different session zero, because there's going to be different things that you're going to talk about. Right. So like if you're doing, you know, and people want to have time to think about what type they want to play within that genre. Like if we're doing Call of Cthulhu, you know, then your session zero becomes, okay, how are we handling the mythos? What type, you know, do you guys want to be real investigating? Do you want to do a lot of supernatural stuff? Whereas if you're doing something like a superhero game, then the question becomes, okay, do you want to do like old school Fuller Color type, you know, superhero stuff? Do you want to do like Marvel? Do you want to do like super gritty, like The Boys? Like what type of superhero thing do you want to do? So I always try to at least pick the game before we actually like get all together, you know? You know, I'll say, you know, and I usually start it off with, okay, what type of game do you want to play? I pretty much have everything, you know, there's IP games, there's indie games, there's this. And I give them and I try not to get too narrow at that point. I usually just say, do you want like a lighthearted type game? Do you want like a gritty game? Do you want like a super drama heavy game? Do you want a game with a lot of mystery? You know, I try to kind of narrow down the kind of elements that the players are looking for that they can agree on. And one trick to do this, one way to do this, or at least start a conversation for anybody listening, is to have everybody write down three elements that they want in the game on their own. Like I usually have them text them to me or message me to them. I say, give me three things that you want, you know, in the game, in a game. And so stuff like that. So my players, you know, specifically, and, you know, nobody will really overlap completely, but you can pull out common elements from what they're saying, you know, like one of my players said, you know, I want to deal with like themes of power and like feeling helpless and stuff like that. You know what I mean? And another one was saying they wanted like an epic story, which kind of feeds in, you know what I mean? Like you have an epic story. Usually those feed into things like feeling helpless to stop something bigger than yourself, you know, kind of like Lord of the Rings, you know, it's bigger than yourself and you're having to do something about it. It's epic and you're learning about power and who hasn't, who doesn't, and stuff like that. You know, those things work well together. So I kind of take that once everybody kind of tells me that and I kind of look at it and I say, okay, here's what I'm hearing. And I kind of restate it for them. I'm hearing you guys kind of want these things. In my opinion, and, you know, if you have another game in mind, let me know. These are the type of games that would be the most, that could do that, that would do that really, really well. And they pick from there. Or if they don't really have, or if the things are vague enough, I'm saying, okay, well, then what type of world do you want to have? And so eventually we will narrow down the game. And we'll say, okay, we're playing vampire or we're playing this, that, once everybody decides. And then we'll set the time for an actual like in person or online session zero, where we get together and make the characters and talk about specifically in the game what we want and stuff. That's usually how I start.
Yeah. And that's generally how mine does. Mine normally ends up coming at the end of the previous game. So if we're at the last session, like if even if it ends suddenly, or sometimes I'll kind of give the heads up to say it's like, okay, I think we got one more session out of this game. Let's start thinking about what to do afterwards.
Yeah, but that I like totally to do it works as, too. Yeah,
I like to do it as soon as the last one ends because it's kind of like, you know, did we scratch a certain itch and can we kind of move to something else or do we want more of that? You know, so if we just did a really action-packed conclusion, you know, it gives a chance to kind of do like a review of the previous game. And then that gives you information on what you want to do from there. Because then sometimes people say like, okay, so I got that out of my system. Now I feel like something a little bit more investigative. Let's be detectives of some kind, getting into the occult. Let's not be a highly incompetent individuals. Let's not be highly competent individuals. And, you know, and let's struggle a little more with some of the basic stuff, you know, that kind of thing. Let's play a survival game instead. Let's mix it up. Mm-hmm. So that's always a good time to feed. One thing that I have done before, my friend Fraser Ronald, and I don't remember if he was inspired by another game that did something like this, but one of the things he did with some of his own creations when during that session zero is we were all basically given dice, and we could basically kind of spend those dice as part of the character creation to determine what parts of the setting we wanted to emphasize. We would all have a series of dice, but some of those dice we'd want to put in towards our character. And we could kind of, if you really, really wanted to play up on the rebellion element of a setting, and it's just like, yeah, I am totally up for that, you could take your D12 in this case and drop it on there and say, like, that's how committed I am. I want that to be there hardcore.
That's cool.
And now, yeah, now no other D12 can go in there, you know? So that person's character might not be quite as powerful compared to some of the others, but they're definitely getting, like, they're, it's the whole part where they're screaming out to the GM, I want to do a rebellion. You know, yeah. That's a big note that's like, damn, that's a heavy investment that they just made. So, yeah. You know, that was a really cool way to do it, because it kind of, because every time everyone would put in a die or something like that, they'd have an explanation why, or they'd add a little something to it. Just be like, yeah, that would be really cool. And it, even too, if we could treat it a little bit more like a heist, like, you know, each adventure is going to actually be a heist, but to overthrow some kind of tyrannical government or something like that. So, and you know, it just really incentivizes. Plus, it gamifies the process. It provides player agency. You get to determine, you know, just how much investment you want to see in this kind of thing. So it was a really nice, it's always one that I've meant to apply myself, but I've just never really got around to it or tried.
7C has something similar. It's called the 100 points. And what it is every player gets 100 points, and they get to put them in like different categories of game, like social intrigue or, you know, whatever, you know, different kind of types of things they want in the game. And so, you know, players basically spend it and say, you know, two examples would be like intrigue and exploration would be like two categories that they could put points in. So one player says, okay, I'm going to put 70 points in exploration because that's what I want to do, and 30 points in intrigue because I don't mind it, but I don't want like a ton of it. And then somebody else will do theirs in a way. And so you kind of look at the balance of, you know, look at the balance of what's going on, and you say, okay, pretty much everybody voted to put points in exploration and a lot of points. So they want to go and they want to explore different parts of the, you know, get a ship and go around and deal with stuff that way and stuff, which is, I'm going to be running an actual play of 7C. And that was pretty much how it ended up for my players. They, you know, they want to explore, they want to, you know, get into shenanigans and stuff like that. And that, you know, all came out from that part. So I think it's a very good thing. I don't know if other games incorporate it, like the one you mentioned or 7C, but I think they should, because it does help give a solid way to get feedback on what type of game the players want to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Rather than, and like I said, and there are many other groups where, you know, especially where published adventures are a big component of the product line. In many cases, that's a matter of, okay, we've got this adventure to run, and each one has its own uniqueness or is part of a series, like, you know, the Pathfinder Adventure Pass, you know, it's like, so this is the fourth one, so we're good, we want to continue with this one, we know what to expect. You know, so there's lots of ways to even shortcut it, so to speak. And in some cases too, there are some groups out there who are just like, you know, man, whatever the GM comes with, you know, like, that guy's magical. You know, yeah. I will go whatever it is. If he comes to the table and he's holding the My Little Pony RPG coming soon, because that is a thing, you know, then it's just like,
I have a copy of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So there we go. So it's like, you know, when you don't have that immediate shorthand of, you know, exactly what it is that you're going to do next, or the GM is the one who's in charge of coming up with all this other kind of stuff. Yeah, there are really great ways to get that kind of incentive and feedback, especially when you have games or systems that have a lot of narrative choice and elements to it. You know, even things like, you know, Powered by the Apocalypse games, where there's an emphasis on success with complications rather than, mm-hmm. you know, outright success.
Right.
And in those games, I tend to find that they can be a lot more straightforward. You know, you can run sandbox style adventures with those, but otherwise, as far as like how everything plays out, there's a very clear path, a very clear progression of how you want to go. Whereas with the more narrative based ones like PBTA, Fate even too, because you get to create your own aspects, getting that kind of player input on the actual game you're going to play, the setting and everything like that, can go a long way, because now you've got to have characters that will fit into this. And I've made the mistake before of not reading the room correctly with the character that I made, and basically wasted one third of my character sheet on horsemanship, on horseback riding and having a horse, not really anticipating the fact that it's just like, well, riding a horse is going to be a minor component to this campaign. There's a lot of indoor stuff going on, you know, and yeah. it just never, you know, so it's one of those things for everybody. They're good opportunities for everyone to get involved, because then I could have, you know, because if I remember correctly with that particular game, I wasn't there in the beginning. I jumped in later on. Yes. So that was one of the differences there. Had I had been involved from the beginning, I could have said, you know what? I watched Hidalgo, you know, a horse movie.
Yeah.
In the mood to, you know, let's do some horseback riding. We never get to see any kind of cool stuff like that. Let's have some battles out in the open Sahara Desert, some kind of thing like that. You know, so it makes a big difference on how you create the characters, because if you know the kind of things that are going to be in it, like in your case, if it's going to be more exploration, then, you know, okay, I need a character who, you know, is really good with, you know, reading maps and all this other kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It goes a long way to even just character creation.
Right. Yeah. You know, or if they're not like skilled, but wannabe, you kind of know that ahead of time. Like, I do have a character in my game who, she's not exactly skilled in a lot of stuff. She's been kind of sheltered, but she definitely wants to get out and learn. You know what I mean? So in that case, that's what she wants for the character. So she can explore, and I can present opportunities for her character to learn things at the same time, you know, like how to tie a knot, how to, you know, set a sail, you know, that sort of thing. You know what I mean? Because that's what she wants. She wants her character to learn those things, not having already known them, but she wants to like become an explorer, you know? And so now that I know that and they want exploration in the thing, I can present opportunities for her to like grow as a character from being kind of sheltered to being much more skilled and competent and being able to do all these things. But that's what getting into that and picking the game and then kind of knowing what the players want out of it become, because all of this, because our topic is setting up a game, right? And casting the circle. And this is part of the setup. If you want to get off on the right foot, this is part of it. You gotta know what the players want to have in the game. And you gotta, because you can't, you're gonna be in for a bad time if you have an idea as a GM of the type of game you wanna run. And the players don't wanna do that. You know what I mean? Like, let's say I wanted to run a really heavily intrigue heavy game with politics and court and all of this stuff, but my players are sitting there going, we wanna explore and stuff. We're going to have a bad time because they're not going to pick up on the social intrigue hooks that I'm giving them or anything like that. They're just going to be like, oh, there's a ship over there. We're going to go over there and do that. And I'm going to be like, you know, left with, you know, all of this stuff. So that's also the reason why I never plan a campaign until the game. Well, first of all, the game that we're going to play, obviously, but also the players have had input on what characters they're going to be and what they want in the game, because then I take those things. Because like with your example, if I had a player who made a character that was like all horsemanship and wanted to be really good at riding horses and stuff, then I know that that's what they want to do. So I, as the GM, as the storyteller, as the guide, whatever it happens to be, need to present opportunities for that player to make that happen. You know, like it would be really bad and really me not paying attention as a GM if this, you know, you had made this character with all these, you know, you wanted to do horse stuff and you wanted to do all of these things with horses and trick ride and have battles on cavalry and all this other stuff. And then I never gave you an opportunity to do it. You know?
Yeah. It's like basically having a thief with very high percentage of pickpockets and, you know, never has the opportunity to pickpockets. Or there's always some kind of, you know, BS thing about like, you know, oh, well, in this nation, no one has pockets. You know, everyone keeps valuables at home, you know, some kind of thing like this.
They don't have pockets in this culture. Yeah. What the heck?
Yeah. It's like, do you remember during character creation when I was bragging about how high that I had a 90% chance to pick pockets, but I have a 5% chance to climb walls? Do you remember me saying that? You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it makes a huge difference because, and I've had that too, an old D&D third edition homebrew campaign that I ran for years because of, you know, not really picking up on that and pushing my story elements that I wanted to bring into the game, I did actually end up losing a player because at one point things started to get really kind of political. I wanted them to move into this very large city and become part of the overall power struggle, and all this other kind of stuff. Because heaven forbid, I found another way to get them actually involved in the overall plot. You know, it's like, no, the only way this will work is if I make them the targets of political assassination. But to do that, I got to move them up the ladder first, you know. Right. So, you know, and that did cost me a player. And it's one of those things in hindsight. It's like dating in high school. Once you're an adult and you actually feel smooth and confident about it, you look back at how awkward you were and the mistakes you made, you know, when you were first putting yourself out there and you're like, ah, what an idiot I was. I really, really, that is not me. That's not who I, you know, it's like, it to me, it always kind of feels like that. When I think back on those kind of, you know, like amateur mistakes for me, you know, kind of rookie mistakes of GMing. It's one of those things where I wish I had learned that lesson sooner, but it is what it is. And that's what happened.
Yeah. You know, I mean, yeah, everybody has to learn and everything, but you know, hey, we're talking about like setting up and this is what we do now, you know, and everything like that. Maybe somebody listening can gain a little, you know, on why we do those things. So all of that stuff that we've been talking about is kind of just before we do an in-person session for me. You know, we'll talk about what type of game and I'll get a sense of maybe what type of character they're thinking of and what they want out of the game, like before we meet up, just a general sense. They don't have to be incredibly specific, but just so I can start making some more specific questions about it. And then when we finally get together, I have a whole list of things that I kind of go through. Where we talk about, okay, we're playing this type of game. From what I gather from you guys, this is the type of thing you guys want to see in the game. And this is the type of characters you're thinking of. So let's go ahead and start making them. And then we'll kind of like make the characters together if we can, because then people can kind of go back and forth and balance each other out and you can suggest things to support each other and everything like that. And I find it's a lot better experience if we can do it that way and do it together, you know, at least talk about the characters, you know what I mean? Talk about them before they kind of get finalized and all this other stuff. You know, so that's kind of like the first part of what we talk about. And then if I've never played with them before, I tend to go over like, what my style is as a GM. I don't know. You can look up like things to talk about in your session zero and stuff like that. And this one, I can't remember seeing like incredibly, but one thing I think is incredibly important for me anyway, is to tell my players, like, this is how I run a game. Like this is, I'm very narrative. So I will take some time to set the scene. So, and I know some players like to kind of just jump in. Well, I do this, I do that. You know, as soon as I mention a person, you know, like if I'm going through a long narration or like if I'm setting up a scene, like they go somewhere new and I'm like, okay, you step into the city, you know, the city looks, you know, bedraggled. It looks like it hasn't seen a lot of abundance in a while. Things are crumbling over here. You see someone homeless laying down on the, in an alley. Over here, you see a shopkeeper, you know, sweeping out there, and somebody's like, I want to talk to the shop. You know, it's like, and you haven't finished yet. So I always kind of explain, like, you will have an, you know, this is why I say this is my style. I will set everything and let you know everything. You will not miss out on an opportunity by letting me finish my narration. You know what I mean? You know, and I always tell them, I always go in turns. So I really want to, for me particularly, I really don't, because I've had this experience myself. And so it's kind of gotten into my GMing style, is I don't like the whole that sometimes in games, it's like whoever says something first is the one that gets the spotlight. I really don't like that kind of aura that sometimes comes from some games. Like the first person to speak is now the face of the group, you know, or the person to do this, that, and the other is the one who you know, does this, that, and the other thing, just because they're talking first, you know? And I try to eliminate that as much as possible by describing how I GM. I say, I'm going to lay out the narration. I'm going to lay out it all. You will not miss anything. I trust me. You will not lose the opportunity to talk to the shopkeeper sweeping if you let me finish up everything I have to say. And you never know, when I finish talking, you may have come up with a different plan. So it's best to kind of let me finish, and then it will be turned over to you. And I tell them it will be turned over to you in turns. Okay, so you don't have to worry about it. I don't act on things when people say them. I always go to all my players and I say, what is so-and-so going to do? I'm going to do this, that, and the other thing. What is so-and-so going to do? What is so-and-so going to do? What is so-and-so going to do? And I look at all of that. And then I sit there and I say, okay, this is the order we're going to take those actions in. Okay. And sometimes when people hear what others are going to do, it changes, you know what I mean? Rather than just having somebody shout in and say, I'm going to do this, and me dealing with that, saying, okay, you do that. And then everything moves along, which makes what somebody else was going to do, which is pretty cool and pretty in character for them, not available anymore, or not viable anymore. It doesn't make sense anymore. I always ask everybody, what are you going to do? And let them all tell me. And then sometimes they adjust themselves. And then a lot of times it helps me just to say, okay, this is the order I'm going to take those things in. And then that way I prevent a lot of that. Like, my players don't worry about that anymore. They don't worry that they're not going to get a turn, because they know I always ask every single one of them. You know, and I tell them, I say, so just tell me, don't worry about what anybody else says. Just at that point when I'm asking you, just tell me what you want to do. Don't worry about anybody else. In sense, at this point, explain it to me. My job is here to help you. Say, well, I was going to do this, but since he's going to do that, I don't know if I should, you know, tell me that, like, that we can work with that. You know, I say, okay, you wanted to do this, but he's going to do this. What can we do to kind of make sure you both kind of are able to do it or not? Or are you willing to let it go to do something else? Like, oh no, I was going to do that, but I hear that that's a better idea. My character's going to do this instead. Cool. Talk to me about it. You know, that's what I always tell them. So I think it's really important to kind of talk about how your style is and how you make decisions as a game master in session zero, so that they have that expectation, because that's how your first session and setting up your game is going to go well. If they already know kind of your philosophy and what you're about and how you make calls and how you handle stuff in the game. So,
yeah. Yeah. And then that makes the first session, like if we look at session zero as being a production meeting, okay, here's what the show is about. We, you know, here's our cast of characters and everything. The first session where the story is now being told, to me, is like the pilot episode. There's still a few kinks you know, like it's what you see here does not necessarily reflect what you're going to start seeing in future sessions. But it's, yeah, that's when you start to really apply everything in principles. And one of the, I think one of the best first sessions that I've ever had was only a couple of years ago playing D&D 5th edition. And I swear I do play a lot of other games, but just so many of my examples right now are from that. And it was the GM, Lori, I believe it was like her second campaign that she'd ever really run. And it was just one of those things, it felt very much like your tutorial level of a video game, even though this was an RPG that we have basically played for decades amongst all of us, not even combined, individually, like decades. But it was still run very much like a tutorial, not to test out the mechanics, but to really kind of test out our characters. But in doing so, it just kind of, you know, helped introduce little things. So it basically took place at a fair, and it helped us establish, you know, everybody and how they fit in with this community that they called their home, so that when it faced danger, that danger was now very personal to us. But along the way, there would be like, okay, there's an apple bobbing contest. So then we would just kind of do skill checks, you know, using, you know, for apple bobbing. No heavy stakes or anything. We're just trying to win a contest. Someone else is trying to win because it was an apple fair. So there was supposed to be an apple baking contest, you know, and then there was kind of like all this intrigue. And when some of the more devious players, characters in the party decided that they were going to try and rig the election, you know, rig the vote. So that is like, you know, their friend's pie with me instead and all this other kind of stuff. And it was just, it helped establish key aspects of the characters of just like, this is the kind of person I want to be in this, in a really fun, lighthearted way. That, yeah. And that first session did end with a looming threat, and bam, swords had to be drawn, got to race out to the roads and see what the hell's going on. But having that little bit in the beginning there, it just kind of helped reinforce how Lori was going to GM, you know, how she wanted to approach all this, because she came in and she had sound effects and music set to each particular encounter that she had planned and everything like that. You know, and then also too, it gave her a chance to kind of, you know, adjust to us and the kind of dynamic that we were going to go with. And yeah, one of the things that came about very quickly is, you know, that we were inclined to spontaneously shout out the idea as soon as it popped into our head. So mm-hmm. she learned to basically kind of do crowd management at the same time of just like, okay, good, let's hold on to that. Let's finish this part right over here. You know, and that kind of stuff. So it was a great way to kind of basically practice what we had established in session zero and then work out the kinks of, you know, what worked and what didn't work so that we can evolve them. When we basically did the session recap, I think that was actually one of the best first sessions that I ever had. And it didn't even involve like combat, which is like one of the fundamental aspects of that game. D&D, you get into combat. Yeah, you get into fights with monsters.
Yeah.
So, and the most fun I had was at an apple bobbing contest.
Yeah. You know, sometimes those things are, you know, like we had a werewolf game, and, you know, my partner runs it, and he had this thing where we met this old white wolf. So it's old white wolf werewolf game. And we met this bone gnar who had like weapons and things, who had like items. And he expected us to like get some stuff and, you know, move on, get some supplies and move on and stuff to do what we needed to do. But we turned it into like an hour and a half long montage shopping session. And, you know, because that's what we wanted to do. And we had a blast doing it. You know, the bone gnar showing all this stuff, and we're like, you know, and we're like testing it out and all this stuff. And we were having a blast, you know. So he just kind of went with it. It wasn't what he had, like, he hadn't planned for it to go on that long, but that's what he wanted to do, what we wanted to do. So he kind of just went with it and stuff. But, you know, that's getting away from, but, you know, I was just kind of agreeing that some of those moments are the best ones, the ones that are not necessarily like what the heart of the game is supposed to be, but it is the heart of the characters. And that's important.
Yeah.
It's not the heart of the themes of the game. It's not the main plot, But it is the heart of the party. It is the heart of the characters, and that's important, I think.
Because there's two ways that you can get, in my experience, there's two ways that you can get players to be really invested in the game and their characters. One is if they actually have this feeling of the characters being a living, breathing organism in some way, shape, or form, where they could actually say to themselves, what would Gerald do? You know, Gerald's this kind of, even if it's just based on something like alignment, or, you know, a motivational statement that is written down on the back of a cue card or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, it really helps, and it makes it feel like they're actually portraying a character who is doing things that they can't do, which is one of the key aspects of role-playing games, of pretending to be other people.
And
what it also does is it gives everyone, you know, when they have a mechanical investment in it, of knowing that these decisions I want to make can affect the game based on my skills, based on my aspects, you know, any of my modifiers, you know, any ways that I can manipulate the game in order to acquire a desired effect. And that first session, when you're actually quote unquote playing the game, is a really great time to kind of try and work out as many of those possible kinks, you know, as you can. And that's why I really started to equate that first session with being a tutorial level in a video game. You know, it's just like, we need to cover a lot of these really basic elements to make sure that this is going to be fun and that we're going to enjoy this. And, you know, because sometimes some things are great in theory, but then as soon as they go to practice, it's like, whoa, that's messy. Like, yeah. I've created some games where there's a very strict turn control system. And, you know, on paper, it looked great. But then when I would actually start to apply it in particular game groups, it seemed really clunky if we're just having dialogue. So then that's when I would learn. It's just like, you know what? We're not going to bother with that. We're going to consider this a dialogue scene. Nobody rolls dice for anything. We're just going to go back and forth freely as our characters and that kind of stuff. You know, it gives you a chance to work out the kinks. And even too, you know, if you start to see, wow, I thought we were going to get a lot further in this first session, so I need to start speeding up some of these other elements. Maybe we'll just do initiative once, for example, rather than rolling every round. You know, it lets you make modifications to do what's best. So that's why I look at it as being like, you know, the pilot episode, but more importantly, you know, the tutorial level.
Everyone's trying to get to know each other, and everyone's trying to, you know. And like I said, I think a lot of that, you know, starts from the session zero, like, because you learn, because, so, you know, the things I talked about is we talk about the game before, what game we're going to do, what they're into about the game, what they want to be involved in, what type of characters they want to play. And when we get to session zero, we make the characters, they kind of talk about that. So I have a good idea of what they're going to play. And I talk about my GM style. But then I also ask the players, you know, what's your play style? You know, what do you like to do in a game? You know, what is that? And so everybody hearing that, it's really helpful for everybody else to help, you know each other a little bit and know how everybody likes to play, what they like about role-playing, to help everybody support each other in getting more of what they want out of the game. So I think that's helpful to create those first sessions that really set everything up, because if everybody kind of has a good idea of everybody else and their kind of personalities, what their character's meant to do and stuff like that, it relieves the burden on the GM to herd cats. You can delegate some of that to the players, because the players know just as much as you do about the characters, and they know just as much as you do about the players most of the time. I mean, unless there's some real specific secret, super secret background thing that, you know, the player wants to come out later, you know, or something like that. But in general, it allows the others to assist in moving the story along in the first episode. In other words, so I always talk about that too. And then of course we talk about safety tools and all of that. And then of course we go over mechanics to make sure everybody is super clear if they have anything they have questions about. You know, I like to go over that too, so people can like learn and feel a little more confident. So they're not in the first session like, how do I do this? How do I do that? You know, how does my powers work? You know, you go over everything with them so they know how it works. You help them keep it in front of them so that they can use them and all of that stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I've had it sometimes where we do a little demo fight where it's just like, okay, let's just, you know, there's no XP for this. We're just going to basically test out each other's characters and then make adjustments if something doesn't quite feel right, you know, because sometimes how the mechanics process in your head when you first read or hear them, they work out a little differently at the table.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it gives everybody a chance to make those adjustments rather than making really embarrassing or awkward starts like I used to do a lot in my teenage years, you know, because I would always have these, you know, really big, huge ideas for characters in my head. But they never really fit with the limitations of being a first level character.
Right.
You know, where it's just like, oh, I'm already starting at 10th level. I need to go humble origins here and start with like, you know, who's a first level character. I just stopped being a farmer. Why am I, you know, this telepath who is actually living on top of the clouds? I need to start as a farmer who is going off to adventure before I go off and do these great, incredible things. Cause then, you know, then the character just really felt impotent in so many ways. Some of my earlier characters, because I wasn't actually creating them for the game itself, I was making them for something else completely different, it seems, that when I actually went to use those characters, they just like flopped and failed. And then it was just like this huge disappointment. And then I couldn't wait for them to just be like wiped off the map, or just like, can he just like fall into a pit trap? And that pit trap just buries itself over. And then my new guy shows up, you know, and then we just, and we do the new hero thing. We just be like, we're going to be suspicious of everybody unless that person is represented by another player at the table. Then we're going to be open armed and welcome him into the group.
Right.
Here, do you need some healing potions? Here you go. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it does. So it's like, yeah, doing a little dry run, little, you know, sample battle kind of thing like that can be really helpful with that too, to work out those kinks. So that once the story starts, you really feel like you're putting your best foot forward.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's, you know, so all of those things, you know, setting and all those things I mentioned, going over safety tools, going over, you know, what you do as a GM, what your goals are as a GM, listening to the players and letting them tell each other and helping them make their characters. And I feel like basing the adventure off what I'm going to do, off of what they make, is a lot better, in my opinion, than trying to make something kind of beforehand and then kind of doing, because if I know the characters, because it's all about the characters, and I know what they are and what their goals are and what their backstories are, and build from that, I'm going to end up with a much better result than if I kind of did it blind and try to shoehorn the characters that are made in there, you know, like it allows you to do that, which creates a good first session. And the other thing about a good setting up a gaming session and having a good first session and making sure that they set up is I always let my players know that I am not above just outright telling you stuff. You know, in other words, like, I'm not going to let you flounder and flail while you remember a rule if I remember it. You know, I'm not going to sit there and be like, hey, you forgot about this thing and I'm going to use it to my advantage. I'll be like, don't you have this ability? And they'll be like, oh yeah, you know, I'm here to help them be badass. I don't care if my villains get killed. That's what they're there for. You know, that's what they're there for. My job is to make it as badass as possible. So yes, sometimes I want them to stay alive a little longer just to make it a little more badass for the players and stuff like that. But I'm not going to dick them over just to get like one up on them or something. Like, my job is to help them. Like, I'm not going to worry about, and I tell them this in prep because I feel like it relieves a lot of the stress for the players. I'm like, I will remind you of names. Like, I'll remind you of somebody's name. Like, if you don't remember the NPC and you didn't write it down, like, I'm not going to do that. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to turn it around and have the person be insulted because the player couldn't remember something that the character probably would, you know, like you met this person 2 weeks ago at the last session, but for your character, it's been a minute since they said their name. So there's no, you know, like it's, you know, I tell them I don't do that. Like if you have a question, I don't remember what's that guy's name or what was that place that they told us to go to, you know, and half the time some other player will remind them and stuff. So I don't have to, but I encourage them. I don't hold that sort of stuff against them. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I will remind them of their characters and stuff like that, but I do encourage them to get to know their characters, and they usually do because they want to, you know, they want to know the characters, the abilities their characters had and stuff, you know, and you should know how that works and everything like that. But like, do I expect you to know it right off the bat? No. Do I expect you to know every single rule in the book? No, I don't know every rule in the book. I make it up a lot. So I'm not going to hold you to the standard I don't hold myself to. We're all in this together, you know, and covering for each other and helping each other out with names and stuff like that as players just makes for a better story in the end, because we're all collaborating. We're all doing this, that, and this together. And it just makes it better. So I always tell them that, you know, really setting expectations and trying to relieve any anxiety they have about starting a game with a new player, with, you know, as a new character or a new player, I find really sets you up for a good gaming session. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, so that's just how to set up a campaign. You know what I mean? And as far as setting up the gaming session, like after the first session, I always have somebody do a recap.
Yeah. Recaps are great.
Yeah, I always have somebody do a recap because that gets everybody in the mindset. You know what I mean? That gets everybody in the mindset, reminds everybody what happened and where we're at. And then that sets you up for a good gaming because they, you know, they pick up and go on, and it costs them to maybe pay attention and stuff. And I rotate. So they always know who's next. You know, I rotate it and say, okay, so-and-so is doing the recap next. And then it's this person. So they know, and they know that it goes in the same, you know, and they just kind of rotate through taking turns during the recap, you know, and everybody chimes in if somebody, they forgot something or whatever, you know, or, and then this happened, you know, oh yeah, that happened, you know, and all that stuff. And I find that's, it's a very important part of setting up the game. It gets us in the mindset that we're about to play. And it reminds everybody of what's going on and, you know, and all of that stuff. So I always find that's a good setup, you know, because you get together and everybody's always chit-chatting and, you know, catching up or whatever for a few minutes, you know. And then for me, it'll usually be like, okay, it's so-and-so's turn for the recap. And then everybody kind of goes, oh, okay, we're going to start now. And so then that person starts doing the recap. We do into that. And then I start setting the scene for the game, which I find is also important to setting up the session. You know, they'll talk about recap and where we left off. And then I'll say, okay, so you found yourselves in the mansion standing there and you're about to meet the prince and, you know, you see this, that, and describe it and get them kind of immersed in the smells and the feel. And you can kind of watch them kind of settle in, you know, as the recap goes on and the setup goes on, you know, rather than just saying, because I've seen some GMs do this and it's just not, you know, everything works differently for different tables, but I've seen some GMs like, yep, that was great. Okay. So what do you say? And they kind of don't build up a little bit. Like they go for the next session and they're just like, okay, there you are. What do you do?
Yeah. Bam. This is exactly, when we last left off, Mickey, you were saying this to the shopkeeper, go.
Yeah. I really don't do that. I usually try to set it up, like remind them a little bit more of like what they smelled and what they heard and what the last thing to happen was. And I kind of narrate that a little bit. And then I say, okay, you were about to speak, you know, to the shopkeeper. And that kind of gives them a sense of settling in, listening to the recap, getting in there, you know, getting into their character mindset, then hearing their narration, getting them further and further in, kind of like guiding them down into a meditation almost, kind of going from the outer circle to the inner, like the outer, like, yeah, this happened so long ago, and then kind of narrowing it down to the moment that they're in right now, kind of guides them down into that place where they are now able to play their character. And I find that's really important to set them up. You have to set them up to be ready to play. You know, a lot of people talk about, you know, oh, well, I do music and I do this, that, and the other thing, and, you know, and whatever, and I have props and stuff, you know, and that's all great. That's also stuff that you can totally use to help set up your session, you know, play some music, you know, have some incense or, you know, like, you know, or whatever, have the props set out or whatever. And that's all very helpful too, but I think it's also important, and it doesn't get talked about enough, on what do you do to help the players get into the mindset? How do you help them transition into the gaming session? And I think it needs to be an integral part of setting up a gaming session. You need to figure out how you're going to do that. And it doesn't need to be complicated. Like I said, mine is a matter of them doing a recap, them hashing that out, and then me kind of narrating down to the moment. And it seems to work pretty well for me, but I'm sure there are other ways you can do it. You know, like some people have a narration they do every time. Like my husband always says, well, last we left our intrepid heroes, you know, when he starts and you're kind of like, you know, it's kind of a Pavlov. Okay. We're playing now and whatever that looks like to help people get into the mindset, because if they're in the mindset to play and they've been brought there, then you're going to have a good gaming session and you've already created that atmosphere to get them to that point.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things that I like to do, and I don't think I've really done it as much as I used to, and it is something I really would like to get back to, but I like to, you know, hog the spotlight for about the first 5 minutes or so with a prologue scene, something that's taking place behind the curtain, you know, and whether or not it's, well, here's, you know, like, so we do the recap. Here's what we did last time. Remember that? Oh, that's right. And you thought that the guy ripped you off. So you want to go back there and deal with this. Okay, got it. Let's make a note about doing that. But then showing them what else is going on in this organic world that they're playing in, where they can now start to see, someone's noticed that we're putting a dent into their operation and now they're getting pissed. So, you know, you play out this scene where the mysterious, shadowy, big evil character is telling this assassin, you know, like, they're becoming a thorn in my side. I need them eliminated. And then this helps the players kind of see, oh, so someone's going to come and get us. You know, mm-hmm. We've ruffled some feathers. And it also, too, you know, can help if there's a certain direction you really want them to go to, but you want them to choose to go in this direction. A good prologue scene, I find, can kind of help lay that foundation down. So that when they see something, you know, like if you give them a subtle little clue or they pick up on something where, like in the prologue scene, it takes place in a warehouse and there's a very specific symbol for this company that you describe on the side of these crates. And then later on, about, you know, half an hour later, you know, the characters are in a store and they suddenly see that logo, and that gives the players the cue that it's just like, okay, this is a direction that we need to go. It's a way to kind of, it's a benefit that we would have if we're watching a movie. We get to see this stuff, and it really helps the players be able to pick up on those kind of clues so that you can kind of keep the story moving in the direction that, you know, that everyone had discussed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. You know, I think what we're talking about, and I think it's pretty good, because a lot of people talk about like practical things, like make sure you have, you know, which are important to talk about, you know, have snacks, have a comfortable place to sit, have pen and pencil, you know, have all these things, prepare for your session, right? To setting it up and stuff like that. And those things are important. But a lot of people have talked to them. So I kind of like that what we've sort of talked about is setting yourselves up mentally and as a group for a gaming session. And I kind of like that, you know, I mean, the practical things do have their purpose, you know, making sure you have the pencils and dice and the books and, you know, comfortable place to sit, and everybody's, you know, ready, and everybody has snacks and a drink and all that sort of stuff. You know, those things are good. Those things are important, and they definitely do set up a session as well. But I kind of like that we've more focused on how to prepare, how to set up yourself up for success mentally and as a group to kind of create the one story that you all want to create. I kind of like that, that that's kind of what we've revolved around this whole time.
Yeah. Well, it's in a way you're trying to get your performers ready to perform. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like we've said before, this is a very small, you know, group where the participants are also the audience at the same time. And, you know, it's, you got to motivate your performers in order to get a good performance out of them. And each performer has their own little quirks. Some of them like to lock themselves in their dressing room beforehand. Some of them vomit into garbage cans just right before they walk out on stage.
Yeah.
You know, and it's when, you know, it's just like, okay, look, this is just their thing. You know, I'm thinking back to Hugh Laurie when he was on the show House. For him, in order to do that character, he had to maintain an American accent the entire time. So much so that no one knew he was British until the season one rap party.
Yeah.
When he starts walking around with his actual British accent. But yeah, that was what he needs to do. And so, yeah, like it's, I find for me looking at it, and even too, if the player is very matter of fact, they don't talk in character, they just state bullet points. This is what I'm going to do. You know, they're still giving you a performance. That's just their way of doing
it. Yeah.
And so, yeah, this is almost kind of like, you know, this is what you do to get them fired up. You know, their motivation. Why are they here? Why are the characters here? What are they trying to get out of this? You know, even if it's something as, you know, like you need to get this new spell if you're going to be able to, you know, banish these demons from the park.
Right.
You know, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, rather than the whole, you know, kind of setting the physical space and atmosphere around, which is important, but, you know, it's this way, I just one of those things, in order to get that really kind of, in order to get the story that you want, and because we've all had to adapt to not having that same physical space and atmosphere, you know, so now it just kind of seems like it's, you know, theoretically, we should all be able to, like, you know, run RPGs from behind a dumpster. Doesn't matter where we run it from, you know, like it's what you're able to do with the performers that you have telling the story with you.
Right. Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's important. And this kind of leads back to, you know, Wicca stuff, because in Wicca and stuff, we have to also prepare ourselves to do magic and rituals and stuff in the same way that you prepare for a gaming session. You know, do you have the right things? How do you prepare yourself mentally to do this task? You know, what's your goal, and solidify your goal? And is anybody working with you? What are their goals? What are their intentions? Making sure everybody's on the same page. It works exactly the same way and has exactly the same purpose as preparing for a gaming session as well. If you're going to prepare to do a spell, if you're going to prepare to do a ritual, you know, you got to prepare, you know, you got to talk about what the purpose is beforehand, what you're going to do, talk with the other people involved and what they're going to do, what their roles are going to be in the ritual, what, you know, what their perspective is, what they think the goals are, and coming to a consensus, and then, you know, preparing yourself mentally to do it and everything like that. It's kind of the same process, and everything like that. So, yeah, I mean, it works kind of the same way. It's just an important thing to do if you're going to be getting into something that, you know, you have an intention going into, whether it be a game and to tell a good story, or whether it's a ritual to celebrate a holiday, or whatever it is. If you're going in with a small group to, you know, do something intentionally, then these things are, you know, really behooves you to do these things and talk about these things and prepare mentally in the way that we've been talking about, as well as physically, as well as getting the things you need together and having all that stuff, you know, having a bathroom available, having, you know, whatever, you know, because preparing yourself mentally and doing that is important. It's important.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a creative exercise. And so these are, you know, helpful ways, much in the same way that, you know, writers have to find a way to deal with writer's block, you know, and setting themselves in the right space mentally to be able to create something rather than waiting for the idea to suddenly come to you, you know, because this is a scheduled thing. Everyone's gathered together to do this kind of thing. And having these techniques to help everybody get into the same mindset, into the same space, and then into the same story, you know, really kind of helps moving things along. Because as soon as you can get that session into a nice flow, everything, next thing, it's one of those things where it's just like, you have to start setting alarms, otherwise everyone's going home late, you know, because yeah. You can get so caught up in the moment. So it's like with racing. I've heard, as someone who's never raced ever in his life, you know, it's like, you want to have a good start because then you can just maintain a good pace, a good head start, you know, like, right. and smooth sailing the rest of the way from there. So I've heard.
Yeah. 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 No, I mean, it's true. You know, you got to set yourself up for success. It's important and you got to get everybody on board. And for me, that looks a lot like what I've said, which is asking questions. That really becomes the crux of making sure that everybody's ready and everybody's prepared and everybody's going to get what they want. You know, asking questions. What do you want out of this? What are you thinking? You know, what is your goal here? You know, why are you wanting to play? You know, asking questions of your players and yourself and everything like that to be on the same page, I think is probably the most integral thing to setting up and people getting ready to play a game, even if it's not like session zero, even ahead of time. You know, I always try to let people, you know, talk a little bit, ask everybody how they're doing. And if somebody needs to vent, I let them vent, you know, like, yeah, you know, they may be cutting into the time a little bit, but if they need to vent to get into the mindset to be able to play and put it behind them, I'm willing to give up some of that time. You know, I'm willing to, you know, let them rant for like 5-10 minutes and, you know, go on and everybody commiserates or offers solutions or just lets them vent or whatever. And then they're ready, you know, because you don't want them to go into this with that thing on their mind, whatever it happens to be, you know, argument at work, you know, the dog is sick, you know, the, you know, whatever it happens to be, you know, on their mind, you know, just, you know, I just got this medical bill, you know, like whatever. It happens to be, that's a United States problem, but whatever, yeah. You know, but yeah. You know, well,
it gives you an alert of where not to go in that particular case, you know, because it's just like, they're dealing with some financial stuff. Okay. We'll just kind of skim over the marketplace stuff for the moment, you know, like we won't really worry about, you know, like, you don't have enough money to buy that suit of armor that you need. Because it's just like, that's really rubbing salt in the wound, you know? And if it's like, you know, if you've got care, you know, if their character is someone who's going through poverty or, you know, the budget's tight, like you're playing part-time gods and your wealth is just, you know, one, you know, and you had to like fight to get it to one, then you might want to kind of pull back on some of those areas for that night, because there's no need to kind of rehash that stuff. You know, they're already going through some of it. But then in other cases too, you know, there's the old adage of just like, so would you like me to give the villain, you know, like a handlebar mustache, like your boss? And then this way you can just like cathartically kind of, you know, vent out some of that frustration on an avatar, you know, that kind of looks like your boss. And I've done some of that too. It's just be like, I just need to know that this sorcerer, you know, just has this long flowing hair. This just, you know, that's just going to help me just get really motivated into this. It's like, yeah, sure, done. Sorcerer's got long flowing hair. Oh, I got a good one.
All right, yeah.
You know, so it's like, you know, and then it just kind of, it helps to kind of lighten the mood and, you know, all this other kind of stuff. So yeah, it can be very informative. Just open conversation in general, because that's what this medium is. It's conversation. You know, so having this and addressing even like, you know, how people are actually really feeling going into a session can really go a long way to keeping that session smooth and then enjoyable. They can forget it or even confront their problems, you know, like in a sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, sometimes it's about those things, you know, I mean, sometimes it's about you know, and that's why GMs have to be. I mean, one of the two skills that I always say are the best skills for any GM to have are, one, as you were saying, communication, and two, empathy, the ability to read the people at your table and the ability to give them what they need. And all of these can be practiced. Okay, you can practice communication, you can practice empathy. Because I guarantee, I think people kind of know about communication. I don't think enough, but people play a lot of lip service to it without actually realizing what good communication is. You know, let me just say that right away. So communication is pretty out there as, yeah, it's important at a table. Table has to communicate. Even though I think it gets a lot of surface level attention from a lot of people, there are a lot of people talking about good communication and stuff like that. But there's also a lot that kind of just plays superficial lip service to it. But I think lesser talked about, but really super important and a factor in the difference between a good game and a great game and a good session and a bad session is being empathetic and being able to see where your players and where the characters are at and being able to adjust yourself to meet those needs at that particular time, even if you had something else planned at the time. I think people really downplay empathy as an important part, one of the most important parts, in my opinion.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. It's because it is. And I think it's, you know, now, especially with the last couple of years, and like as we're recording this, 2022 has just started, you know, and it's the third calendar year of a pandemic. That whole approach of just empathy towards others, you know, it just very much feels like a given, because, you know, these games, for those of us who love playing them, you know, have also become stressful in some ways because we've had to adapt all these, you know, measures. I haven't actually run a face-to-face game since the pandemic started.
I have not either.
Yeah, you know, but I mean, even too, like as an online one, I haven't really GM'd anything in that time. And so as a result, when that time finally comes, I'm not totally sure what kind of, you know, headspace I'll actually be in at that moment. And so that's kind of one of those things where it's, you know, I could be like super gung-ho and, you know, be like, you know, on Pop Rocks, you know, like just like loaded with sugar and just like running around the table in circles. Or I could be like really somber and just having a hard time really get myself in there because it's just like, I feel out of practice or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. You know, being able to know that I can just like kind of come out and share that kind of stuff and just be like, all right, this is the first time I've GM'd something in a while. If you've played with me before, I might be a little slow. I might be a little off my game, you know, so just kind of bear with me. I haven't done this in a little while, you know, kind of thing. You know, it can go a long way because, you know, I don't think there's any reason why any of us should expect that everyone who shows up to any kind of social encounter is, you know, rocking it perfect, 100% score, no problem, A+ on life, you know. Those days are gone at the moment.
Yeah. And keeping in mind, and part of that empathy is realizing when you're just not going to get a game that day. And it's hard because, you know, you spend so much time trying to get everybody together. And, you know, especially as adults, you know, when we do, you know, our free time has to be, you know, guarded with dogs and barbed wire and all this other stuff, you know, and it's hard to get other adults together to role play consistently. It's also important to realize that part of that empathy is realizing when you're just not going to be able to get people in the headspace that day. You know, something happened, something is going on, or going on with several people, or, you know, whatever. And you just can't do it. And the best thing you can do in that situation is asking yourself, is this really going to benefit us in the long run to try to force a session at this point? You know, I think it's really important to keep that as an option, you know, and not feel bad about it, because the whole thing is we want to do this. It's fun. And if you're trying to do it because of other things, because, oh, we're not going to have time or, you know, stuff like that. We've worked so hard to get this time together and stuff like that. Then it starts to become more of an obligation than something fun that you're getting to do with your friends. And I think it's important that people have that in mind too, when they're trying to engage and get people ready for a gaming session and figuring it out is knowing when the table, and that's part of that empathy, is just knowing when the table magic is not going to be there, you know, it's just not that particular day. And that happens with rituals and stuff in Wicca too, you know, you get all revved up to do it and then you're there and you're just, you're lighting a candle and you're like, you know, I just, not happening today, you know, and you got to be okay with that sometimes, to take the empathetic, to take the more sensitive, to take the more, to put, because here's the thing, the players and yourself as people come first, regardless of anything else. The game is the game, but everybody's mental health, everybody else's enjoyment, everybody else's need to stay safe when they play a game is more important than anything else. It's more important than having pencils. It's more important than having papers or the books or anything else that people think they need to have a gaming session. It's the most important thing. And that's where you should come from at all times, is looking at the people that you're playing with. Realize they're your friends. Realize that you care about them. And you want to give them the best experience possible. If you're GMing and your session and your desire and your GMing style or your playing style, because this works just as well for players too, getting themselves psyched up or trying to get themselves sucked up. Just realize that you're with your friends and realize that you want to do this. And if it comes from that place of the desire to have fun and the desire to help tell a good story that everyone's going to enjoy and be talking about, you know, you're going to do okay. You're going to do okay at the start of the session. If you're setting yourself up with that intention in your mind, you know, that everybody's mental health and the people come first. You're going to do okay.
Yeah. I think it'd be a good time, you know, as a future topic for us to cover, is when to recognize that you need to make a change in the game. Be it a campaign, even to mid-session, you know, some kind of thing like that, you know, when, you know, all signs point to no, or signs point, you know, when to make that. And even to, if that means stopping completely, you know, when to recognize this game's not working for us. There's something about this setting. I just completely blew this adventure, you know, when to, you know, basically hit the brakes and make a shift before it, you know, so that you can avoid that sense of drag of just like, I'm just going through the motions, you know? So I think that'd be a good thing for us to cover for like another topic, because that is a discussion unto itself.
Yeah, it is. It is. So do you have any last thoughts on?
Really? It's like, when it comes to, it's been so hard. Like, I feel like I've had to just draw so many memories because it's been so long ago. But I know for me, I'm way more focused on making sure that we're all in the right creative mindset going into, you know, that first session, more than, you know, making sure, you know, that my chair is comfortable, or just like, oh crap, I didn't brew enough coffee, or some kind of thing like this, you know. For me, it's all about getting into that creative mindset, because, you know, that's the part that I've started to realize, having time away from the medium for a while, I realized that the part that I really enjoy the most is the storytelling aspect. And so as a result, that's what I need, you know, like I need that investment out of it. And so, you know, that's more of my concern. I know more so going into it, I will bullshit my way through the mechanics if I have to. I always do anyway.
Yeah, right.
So now I'm just going to embrace that. You know, that's the main thing. You know, for me, it's that creative push that you give to everybody.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and for me, setting up a game session is all about, you know, being really direct with my communication and, you know, trying to come from a place of empathy you know? And even when planning it, I always start with the characters first. And that's a good way to help set yourself up for success too. And setting up a game session is, when you're planning, start with the characters first. Start with what they want and what's going on with them and their backstory. And start there when you start planning stuff. And the players and how they're feeling and stuff. And that's why I do stars and wishes as well. That's why I use the safety tools I do, because they're all feedback tools to help me set up the next session to be just as good as the one before, and get everybody pumped up, you know, for the next session. So yeah. For sure. But
ask yourself what would Hrothgar the Barbarian do?
Yeah. Yeah, but definitely anybody listening, you know, let us know, you know, what do you do? You know, what haven't we talked about in terms of setting up a gaming session, and you know, what's your philosophy on it? And, you know, how did you come to those conclusions? Was there your experiences? Talk to us about it, because I'd like to hear from other people for sure.
Yeah, and how has it changed, you know, when you've had to adapt how you've played the games? You know, what things do you add to it now? Do you do wellness checks now than maybe you wouldn't have done before? Are you more inclined to use safety tools now than you were before? Or are you less inclined, you know, kind of thing? Like, you know, how have these things changed in the last couple of years?
Yeah, for sure. So thank you everybody for listening to us and everything like that. So I hope you have a little gaming in your magic and a little magic in your gaming. And we will talk to you next time.
Bye everybody.